For the most part, though, all of the races in North Carolina have been certified. That's true nationwide as well. So we've got a sense of where things stand after the midterm. Now it's time to start looking at 2020. And of course, specifically the presidential race on the Democratic side, and to figure out a nominee. And there are going to be a lot of names tossed around as potential nominees between now and primary season. We're joined now by Tom Jensen, who is the director of public policy polling based out of Raleigh. Publicpolicypolling.com is their website. Find them on social media at PPP Polls. Tom, thanks for joining us today.
Hey, Aaron. Good to be with you.
So before we get into 2020, let's wrap up 2018. I know there's that one race around Bladen County, the 9th District, that's still kind of outstanding, but we have a really good sense now of where the congressional picture is winding up following the midterm. So what is the final picture?
Well, we finally had the last uncalled House race in the country called yesterday, although maybe North Carolina 9 is going onto the uncalled list. But that was California's 21st congressional district. That was somewhere Democrats were not really seen as having a chance of winning, and they did win. So that ended up meaning that Democrats picked up 40 seats in the House and now have a 235-200 majority for the next session. I think people generally were expecting Democrats to win the House, but 40 was definitely on the higher end of projections for what number of seats Democrats could win. So I think really it sort of took a long time for it to develop beyond election night that Democrats had picked up that many seats. But it definitely did end up being on the higher end of the projections. And California is really sort of indicative of why it was such a big year for Democrats. There were 7 congressional districts in the state that had Republican representatives that had voted for Hillary Clinton in 2016. And with the flip of California 21 yesterday, all 7 of those Republican-held seats in California that Hillary Clinton had won ended up going Democratic. And overall in the country, I think there were 23 or 24 Republican-held seats that had voted for Hillary Clinton, and there's now only 3. So we definitely see this sort of realignment where there used to be differences in how places voted for president and Congress and other sort of offices, and now it's really sort of coming in alignment with themselves. There's basically no Republicans left in districts that Clinton won, and there's not a whole lot of Democrats in Congress in districts that Trump won.
So with that in mind, kind of looking ahead to the congressional picture for 2020, is there room to move, or what can we kind of expect to see? 2018 was a really, really good year for Democrats. Does that mean the pendulum's going to swing back the other way in 2020, or are there still some more seats that Democrats might pick up?
Yeah, I mean, there's really sort of two different models for how 2020 could go that are completely contradictory of each other based on recent history that make it hard to say. 2006, Democrats clean up in the House elections and then go right on into 2008 and have an even better year, win the presidency, win a ton of Senate seats, win even more House seats. So that's one model for it. But then you can also go back to 2010, Republicans completely dominate the midterms, take control of the House, make gains in Senate races, and then Barack Obama gets reelected and Democrats pretty much run the table on Senate races. So there's no conclusion to come from that except that we really just don't know what's going to happen in the next couple years because there's recent precedents for either this Democratic momentum continuing on for another cycle or for it to be stunted. So I think to some extent we will just have to kind of see how events unfold.
And what about the Senate? Again, decent year for Democrats in terms of not losing as many seats as was feared, but still some gains for Republicans. Where did things end up, and what is the picture starting to look like for 2020?
Well, we had the runoff election in Mississippi for the Senate on Tuesday night, and in a lot of ways that was really sort of emblematic of the whole cycle when it came to Senate races, which was that it's a state that Trump won by 18 points, and the Democrat Mike Espy only lost the Senate election by 8 points. It was the first Senate election in single digits in Mississippi in something like 3 or 4 decades. So it was a very impressive Democratic performance, but it came up short. And that really sort of fits the whole big picture when it comes to Senate elections this year. Heidi Heitkamp in North Dakota, Joe Donnelly in Indiana, Claire McCaskill in Missouri, they all really outperformed how Hillary Clinton had done in those states in 2016. But Trump had won those states by so much that even outperforming this year wasn't enough to get those incumbents kept in office. So the moral victory for Democrats from coming out minus two seats and giving Republicans a 53-47 majority is that at least Democrats didn't lose so many seats that there's no way they can get control in 2020. They won really close races in places like Montana, Nevada, Arizona. If they'd lost those places, they might have been in a position where it was impossible to even get back control of the Senate in 2 years. But there are a number of seats that are up for re-election in 2020 where Democrats should have a good chance. I think Colorado is sort of the start of the list, but then Maine, Iowa, Arizona, and of course us in North Carolina certainly gave Democrats enough opportunities to play offense where there's a world where they could possibly get a majority in 2020, especially a world where they could get to 50-50 in the Senate but elect a Democratic president where the vice president then would cast tie votes in the Senate in a Democratic direction. So good year for Republicans in the sense that they picked up seats, but a good year for Democrats in the sense that they mitigated the damage and at least put themselves in a position where maybe they can get control of the Senate one of the next couple cycles.
Looking ahead to future elections, how much is the South in play? I know Republicans pretty much swept all of the races in the South, including the ones that we thought were close, but Texas was close, Mississippi was close, Florida was close, although that's been swingy for a while. Georgia saw close races, and I saw an article online, I think it was yesterday, that I thought was really emblematic, where some pundit was going on about how Mike Espy's loss in Mississippi was bad news for moderate Democrats, as if it's a huge surprise that a Democrat lost in Mississippi. But that's the point that we're starting to get to, or we're starting to get to maybe that point when Democrats can make inroads in a part of the country that they've been losing forever. So is that a trend that you're seeing might end up with actual victories in future elections, or are we peaking now?
No, I think that Democrats are definitely becoming more competitive in the South, and they're especially becoming more competitive in the biggest southern states. North Carolina, Virginia, Florida, I think were already pretty much on the swing state list. But I really think that after Stacey Abrams loses by 1 point, Beto O'Rourke loses by 3 points, Georgia and Texas are getting pretty close to being on that swing state list. And one thing that's pretty remarkable anytime we poll Georgia or Texas is how massive the generational gap is. Mm-hmm. Republicans are still winning in those states because of their support from seniors, but younger voters in those states are strongly pro-Democratic. So there's really sort of an element of generational change, I think, is going to put Democrats in the position to really succeed in Georgia and Texas. And even though they lost the statewide races in those states, Democrats did pick up three congressional districts in those states, one in the Atlanta suburbs, one in the Houston suburbs, one in the Dallas suburbs, that 3 years ago the idea of a Democrat winning in any of those districts would have been absolutely laughable. And it's remarkable not just that those districts have become competitive, but that they've become competitive so quickly. And then the other aspect I think that's very important to recognize in states like Georgia and Texas is that they're getting less and less white, and non-white voters are leaning extremely Democratic. We usually think of that in terms of African Americans and Latinos, but in this election, Asians voted similarly Democratic to African Americans, and there's a lot of Asian American voters in these suburbs of big southern cities like Atlanta and Dallas and those kinds of places. So all of those sorts of trends, I think, are going to make it so that I think sometime in the next decade, most likely a Democrat is going to win something big in Georgia or Texas. They'll carry the state in the presidential race, or they'll win a governor's race or a Senate race or something. But I really think that those are coming off the deep red list.
Speaking with Tom Jensen, publicpolicypolling.com is the website. So that's the congressional picture post-midterm, pre-2020. How about the presidential picture in 2020, especially on the Democratic side? Who are the candidates that are being talked about as potential primary challengers, and who seems to have the inside track?
Well, the first thing I should say is that we got hired to do a couple polls in Iowa and New Hampshire a few weeks ago on the Democratic presidential race, and the client who hired us had us test 25 different Democratic candidates. So I think that's a big part of the story, is just that it could be one of the largest fields for president that we've ever seen. And because of that, the two people who are going to start out leading in polls are Joe Biden and Bernie Sanders, simply because in a field with so many different people running, they're going to have the most name recognition if they decide to run to start out. But I don't think that really makes them the front runners by any stretch of the imagination. Another interesting poll finding that we had in the last few years was that even though Biden and Sanders lead when you actually ask about named Democrats, when we ask people sort of what generation they want the next Democratic candidate to come from, they say they want someone in their 40s or 50s. And of course, Biden and Sanders are in their 70s. So I think there's a strong desire and a strong openness to some of these newer candidates who are going to come along. After Biden and Sanders and some of this early polling that we've done, the three candidates who I would sort of put in the next tier behind the two of them are Elizabeth Warren, but then Kamala Harris and Beto O'Rourke. And Harris and O'Rourke obviously are people who are newer to the scene. And I think the fact that both of them are already polling at double digits in some of the early states really does show that some of these folks who maybe haven't been around as long, once voters get to know them a little bit better, I think are going to be positioned to have a real shot at the nomination.
Not to play my own hand in terms of who I want to see get the nomination, but how's Cory Booker doing?
He's right around that 10% mark, too. So you have sort of Biden and Sanders in the 20s, and then a bunch of people clustered right around that 10% mark, plus or minus a couple points. So Biden certainly, Booker certainly would fit that bill of Democratic voters looking for someone who's in their 40s or 50s. And I think Democrats are going to want a diverse ticket. There's going to be, I think, no appetite at all for a ticket with two white people on it. And I don't think there's going to be a ticket appetite at all for a ticket with two men on it. So I think that we are close to guaranteed to have a Democratic ticket that features at least one woman and one person of color, really to reflect the diversity of the party. But I also think that that sort of push for diversity in the party opens up the door to new candidates. And I also think a ticket like that that better represents the diversity of the country perhaps has the potential to excite Democrats in the presidential race in a way that maybe wasn't quite the case in 2016.
Speaking with Tom Jensen, and as we wrap up, I know 25 potential candidates in the field, and there are probably going to be other names thrown in there as well. Last time around, we had 17 Republican candidates, and that was one of the things that allowed Donald Trump to emerge with the nomination, even though he never had majority support from even Republican voters really at any time until the very end of that Republican primary cycle. He just got more votes than everyone else because his base of supporters just stuck with them. So among those 25 people, do you see someone with a really strong base of supporters who are going to stick with that particular person no matter what?
I think it's hard to say at this point, but one thing I would note about Trump winning, even though people didn't really like him, is that I think Democrats and Republicans just look at this differently. A few of the candidates who clients have had us test in some of these early polls are Oprah, Jon Stewart, Mark Cuban. And what we find is that Democrats love Oprah and Democrats love Jon Stewart, but they don't get any support for president. And that's sort of, I think, the difference between how Democrats and Republicans approach this is Democrats sort of love their celebrities, but don't necessarily think they should be elected president. Whereas Republicans were willing to take that to a step that I don't think Democrats were willing to. So people say, oh, the Republicans had such a big field and it was bad because it ended up with Trump. Well, A, Trump won, so that's not necessarily bad for Republicans. But B, I don't think just because Democrats have a large field means that they're going to end up with a candidate who many people see as being unqualified in the way that Republicans did. The parties just have different cultures.
PublicPolicyPolling.com for more info online. Find them on Twitter at PPPPolls. Tom Jensen, thank you so much.
Thanks, Aaron. Take care.